Welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Kavanagh.
And I'm Will.
Yes, you are, young William. And today we're going to have some conversations.
Young William.
Well, I'm just trying to keep it real, buddy. Just trying to keep it real. This week's episode, we're going to talk a lot about breed standards, those subtleties that keep us going, and how they refer to places in time when certain words were written. Also, photographers, markings, cupcakes, and impact crates. All that and more right here.
Busy day.
On the Dog Show Drive.
I'm born to run down rocky cliffs. Give me grace, bury my sins. Shattered glass and black holes can't hold me back from where I need to go. Oh, 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 oh. Yellow hills.
Well, good morning, young William. I know it's a little bit early, and I'm proud of you for being not only on time, but early from early. That's, I'm very proud of you.
I was already here waiting for you. Like, I was watching the news, which is what's Sports Center. Yeah. What I call the news. I was watching the news, and you showed up.
Eating breakfast. Yeah, I was eating breakfast.
Anyway, background, the sun is like coming through my windows there.
And yeah, it's a very attractive shot.
And I still have my beagle cap on.
You do have your beagle cap on, and I got the same one. But we already talked too much about beagles, they tell me. So,
all of you.
Some poodle people. No, I'm only kidding.
We're in charge of this podcast. That's why we started this podcast.
This is going to be called Beagles and Hockey from now on, and that's all there is to it, Jerry. All right. A couple of follow-ups on last week. First of all, we all were... very disappointed that Impact Crates, one of our favorite brands of crate, one of many, didn't make a size for small dogs anymore. Beagles, Schnauzers, French Bulldogs, that kind of thing. And it's not on their website. So just on a whim, I messaged them and said, hey, you know, I sure would like to get one of your crates, but too bad you don't make them for Beagles anymore. You know, I'm looking for like a 24, 18, 19.
Two or 300.
And she said, well, sure we do. And I said, well, it's not on your website. Sure, it's on their website. So I showed her the error of their ways. It's not on their website. If you Google Bantam Impact Crates, you will get the small crate that that they come in either 20-inch length or 24-inch length. So for, you know, Frenchies or Beagles and Schnauzers and whatever else. And they do sell them. So there you have it. You just have to Google Bantam. So correction made. They do make them. They just don't have them on their main website, which I hope is going to change. And she assured me that was an oversight. She said, I wonder why the small orders have been down. Well, because you're not, you can't find them.
Well, so you know, the good thing about that, Wayne, is because we're talking about it right now, I don't have to call Sherry and tell her because she's listening as live as she can. She listens as soon as it comes out, and she'll know that this is what she wants.
So. There you go. And the white ones are the coolest. $200 extra.
Blue. Come on.
Blue. Yeah. also, I have another correction. Not a correction, a follow-up. Last week, Will, I talked in jest about the pressure of getting these cupcakes to the wedding. Do you remember that?
Oh, no.
And I said, you know, swerve into a guardrail or going, and they all fought, and I ruined the entire wedding. That was my concern. I was so worked up over it. And as it happened, we got the cupcakes. These are very decorative, extraordinary cupcakes. There's a cupcake in there, but it's mostly the sugar crap on top that people like, right? Well, balloons and pickles, whatever they put the name cupcakes. So all that's in the back of the car. We're doing good, Will, but we're running a little bit late because that's what I do. So it's about a half hour drive down country roads and I'm flying. And I didn't see the railroad track.
Oh no.
Yeah. And they went flying. Cheryl said in the rearview mirror, she could see the whole cupcake tray come into her eye line and go back down.
Oh, no.
Now, we didn't destroy all the cupcakes, only a dozen of 100. I felt so bad. And then I thought back to the podcast. I was, you know, all this pressure the cupcakes. Well, there was pressure, and I blew it, Will. I'm no longer trusted to transport cupcakes. Very sad day. But the boys were there. Brody's hockey teammate buddies were there. And they had no problem dispatching of the dozen cupcakes that had the icing in different places in the cupcake at this point. They hid them, as only can be done by swallowing them whole.
I myself got a response from last week's podcast, too. You got a response from cupcakes and podcast or impact baits. I got photographs of toilet paper. With dogs wrapped in toilet paper.
From the puppy tracking. What is it about dogs that like just taking that toilet paper?
Like them. They just like them, yeah.
They must be programmed in their behavior. Get rabbits, eat food, get toilet paper. Retrievers do it all the time. That's just an obvious. They're bringing something back to you. Hey, you need some? They bring it back. What's your puppy's name, by the way?
Mia.
Mia, like Mia. Pharaoh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I spoke with the owner of the sire of the Beagle in Czech Republic last night, who is wonderful, by the way. And she tried to get me to pronounce Terapacket Turgi correctly. Terapacket, I don't. I didn't do well, Will. She said I sounded like I said Tara in Spanish instead of Czech. So I'm working on it. The good news is, as we both agreed, Alice and I both agreed, when it comes to a beagle, if I have food, I can mess up her name.
It won't matter what her name is.
And she's going to be coming for the food. So
I would just open the door. Come in, beagles. They all come.
Right. Yeah, that works. Food. No, they're all going to come. But yeah, it was fun. And it got me thinking about the international influence that we now have among breeds. And it's not unusual for dogs of all breeds to come from Australia, for sighthounds from Sweden.
Normal sighthounds in Sweden. Right?
But sighthounds in Sweden, they just have a thing for those. They have a beautiful way of operating them.
And I guess they have some beautiful retrievers over there too.
Sweden. Yeah, they do. Flat coats. Oh my.
It's just,
in Australia, seems to take the more typical type here, I should say. Dogs from England, breed them to the show dogs from America and come up with something nice in the middle. And that's been going on forever. But now we do have, in beagles, a contingent from that part of Europe, including Ukraine and Czech Republic. And it's really been interesting to see how those dogs have influenced. In fact, the way I'm getting this beagle here is someone imported a cocker from Czech Republic to America. So we're seeing more and more of this as transportation and DNA and frozen semen gets, you know, shipped around the world and these breeds come together. We had, I'll only mention a little bit from Aldi because I think we might have overdone it last week, but really there were dogs there from Sweden, Ukraine, Canada, Mexico, Chile. And that's what a good gene pool should be doing, right? Keeping enough genetic diversity in the gene pool for people to use and to
Australian impact in New Zealand and Aldi as well.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. New Zealand beagles represented. So, I mean, that's just good for any gene pool to widen it and make it a little bit more diverse. I think it's not even uncommon anymore. It used to be, this dog got imported from somewhere. We're all going to go see it. Now it's not as uncommon as it used to be. Right. And one of the things it does in springers and beagles and in many other breeds is it challenges our ability to judge through markings. I don't know if there's ever going to be an open marked springer, no matter how good they are, that's going to be a top flight winner. When's the last time we saw one of those?
True, yeah.
Elmer Brown?
It's all about adjusting your eye, you know? Really. So.
I mean, Elmer Brown, Weight Rock Elmer Brown had freckles, yeah, ticking. Ooh, couldn't have that.
We had a dog up here, I can't remember his real name. that spread them. And we used to call him Sam the Wonder Dog. He was an English looking dog. He had the freckles and whatnot. He gets a fair amount of winning. So
yeah, back in fair amount's not top top. And
no,
and you know, it's that's just silly. No matter how good they are, and there are some real, as we know, there's some real good springers, Northern Ireland and many other places. Could they win with the markings? Yeah. Some people say they're a completely different type. I've always thought, well, if you bred them right and maybe crossed in a couple of more typical American looking dogs, and but you still, if you had the open markings, I don't think. And a lot of it's trimming too when it comes to breed like that. And beagles, of course, in England, you're going to see nothing but open marked and red and whites and all kinds of crazy tricolors and bicolors. None of those dogs could really be giant winners over here. An open mark tri, it's very difficult to take off with one of those. And the standard's real clear. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in springers. It doesn't matter in most breeds. But
it just becomes really non-typical over here. That's all.
Pardon?
It just becomes non-typical over here.
It does. And I think that's unfortunate because it doesn't have anything to do with type. It has nothing to do. It's one of those things that people can see.
Right.
And any idiot can see it. It takes someone with an eye for nuance and breed type to find a dog regardless of its markings. And it's a lot easier. I mean, clearly, black blanket tri beagles have an edge, regardless of what you might say. I'd like to think that wasn't true, but
it's just a typical beagle look, and it's because we've seen it throughout the years, all the great winners.
Yeah, and it's pretty.
It's pretty. It's eye catching.
Who thinks a beagle should have the adjective pretty? It's a sporting hound. But yeah, it happens, and it's so many breeds. It's just beyond. I mean, there was a time when if it wasn't Blue Roan, you weren't going to win with an English Cocker.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
And now you have solids, and you have tries, and all kinds of, you know, Blue Roan and tans, I should say, and all different colors in there, and they can win. So that breed has made the shift.
Oh, for sure. And there was a time when you really couldn't be impactful with a red and white beagle. And
yeah,
those days are over. You know, you can be impactful a red and white beagle.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see that, thank goodness. There's lots of blue tries. The beautiful bitch of County Congress, Angela, she was a blue try. So they can win. It's just going to, you know, it just takes, and judges have to make exceptions with eye color. Read your standard and see what's acceptable depending on the color. In pointers, you're not going to get jet black eyes and pigment on a liver and white because it's impossible genetically to do so. You're going to be self-colored eye rims and noses. Same is true with lemon and white pointers.
And that because that, and even though it's acceptable, that becomes a quality that someone has a favoritism for, has or leans towards because they can't, they all their lives, they cannot put up a light-eyed dog. You know, they can't. Right. So even if it's acceptable, they have a problem with it.
And the pendulum swings the other way too sometimes. Right now, lots of solid pointers. I like them, but I often wonder if it's now it's so cool to put one up that they get an edge because they're so different and you want to show the world that you know better.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's okay now.
Well, it's like talking about the open mark springers. Is someone, I don't, this doesn't want to seem to be disparagingly, but jokingly, but if someone's going now and they can be stuck in the Discovery Channel trying to find an open mark springer without even really seeing if it is competitive or not, is it going to win because, oh, see, it can win.
I have to say that when I started judging, which was 32 years ago, I had to be careful with English Cockers because I like the odd colors. And they'd bring them to me, and I had to make sure it was the best one, not just an odd color, you know, overcorrecting for the past, maybe, I don't know. You know, it's funny when you're judging and you do, say, a Springer specialty, and you put up black and whites all day, they're convinced that you only like black and whites.
Right.
That's hysterical. Yes. You know, they just happened to be the best ones that day.
He wants black and white. He doesn't like our dogs.
They were pink and beige. I wouldn't have cared. They were the best ones. But, yeah, and you'll get that. And then you get, you know, if someone puts up a solid pointer, they get 50 of them the next show.
And now we're getting overrun. Well, you'll go into short hairs and you get to look at all the black and white ones now, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a thing.
It's hard. Like I come from Canada where let's go to our breeds from this country, Newfoundland. Well, I look at grays and browns and first thing that pops in my head is they're disqualifiable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an issue, right? Now, how many people are going to still hold that grudge and not do anything for the black German Shorthair pointers? And how many?
I'm sure it's a grudge. It's something that's been ingrained over the years.
Yeah, true.
Grudge.
Well, some of them are mad about it, and that might be.
The breeders and whatnot, but I mean, I'm not a breeder, and I still remember all kinds of controversy over dogs. That that dog's almost black, and you know,
yeah. When you think about it, who are we? The country of origin, German short hair pointer says it's okay. So what's our hang up?
Yeah.
Our hang up is that it's a possible indication they were crossed with pointers that had black nose and black and eye, black pigment, which would give them the option of turning black when you're bred in the liver. So I guess that was the initial thought that there would be. You know, so it would be an indication of a cross to another breed. I don't know.
You drop a loony? Is that why you're...
I dropped a screw, Will. And I don't know why there's a screw on my desk. There's two
of them. You don't even have loonies down there anyway, so it's okay.
And I've been playing with them, and one just, it left. So I'll step on it with a barefoot later on and find out exactly where it is. But you had mentioned something earlier about, we're talking about, I was fortunate when a couple weeks ago when our son had a nice big win, John Ashby was available. Took a great photograph. How lucky are we to have? And over the years, I think of, you know, we had Evelyn Schaefer and Joan Ludwig. Those pictures still stand up. And they had a single frame camera. Film for them was a piece of 8x10 film that they took out and they shoved it in this giant large format camera. Mm-hmm. And you had one chance. You know, how good were they? Now you can just go, you know, if you want it.
And take a million of them. So
yeah, but now we have so many more photographers than we used to have. Show photographers, I'm talking about, and we still have John Ashby, who has got to be the classic guy, right? I mean,
there's no question.
And he provides. He's had no problem making the change from film to digital, and publishing. You know, sending you the link so you can see. For free, the proofs, and pick the one you want. If you want to Photoshop out a watermark, it's going to look stupid if you even try, but you'd also be a jerk because these people are making a living doing it, but they're not gouging you. They're showing you what they took, and you get to buy what you want.
And there's becomes a difference too between, I even call it with handlers too, or anybody, passion or the money. Like I've talked to John where I say, I've misplaced this picture, and I'll open my mailbox and John has sent me the picture. You know, it's that's just the way it is.
Class act. Yeah.
It is. I just object to a lot of. I don't want to get into it really because I don't want to cause.
I will. There are photographers who are charging to look at their proofs. I mean, give me a break. If your watermark's on it, no one's going to steal it. And you should be able to look at that proof and pick whatever you want before they print it.
And you shouldn't
get it. It's just digital. It didn't cost them a penny to take them.
See, I'm going now. I don't want to get an invoice before I see a picture.
Exactly.
That's what I don't want to happen to me, because that's what's been happening to me. And I put up with it. And to the point, I almost paid it just to get the stop being harassed.
Yeah.
But
well, can you imagine you call that LLB and you say, I want to buy a pair of shoes. Okay, we'll send you an invoice. And then you get to pick out the pair of shoes.
Not even that. You send me the money first, you know, and
yeah, and then you can see the shoes that I'm sending. Right. Could be black, could be high heels. You don't know yet. You're just going to get them when you get them.
In this digital era, it's not like John where he had to produce the proofs, go into the darkroom and produce the proofs, and then put that. Like, no, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. This wasn't very long ago that John and many, well, all photographers before digital came out, you took the film home and you developed it in your darkroom, or you sent it out to a lab.
Yeah.
But you didn't know what you were going to get back until that picture appeared on the piece of paper. I mean, I had a darkroom when I was a kid. My father was a photographer, and I could still smell the chemicals. You put the paper in, and all of a sudden you're sitting there watching, and all of a sudden the image just slowly appears on the piece of paper. It was wonderful.
Oh, for sure.
Sometimes. Otherwise, it appeared, and you go, oh, I got to take another one of those. But you're real prudent about how many pictures you took because it cost money and chemicals to print everyone.
Even in the day of the snail mail, we had to wait by the mailbox to get our pictures. We used to have like Alex Smith, Bill Stone, all photographers up here. You would rush to Alex's booth the next dog show because he had a book full of last week's dog show's proofs. And you'd go through it and you'd say, I want this. We all would rush to go see our pictures.
Yeah.
And same with Stoneham. You would rush and then you'd pick the picture and then you'd wait 2 weeks for it to arrive in the mail.
Yeah. 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 Because I had to make it, right? And yeah. Bill Gilbert, too. Remember Bill Gilbert? I mean, God, he was a great photographer. We have had so many in the States, and I know you have in Canada as well. And then there's this, you know, the new thing of taking the candids, which I think is pretty cool. That was never allowed. That was in the premium. Nobody can take pictures. Now we really, those are a lot of the best ads we have. Lisa Croft Elliott and Diane Hahn and Gay Glasbrook, a dear friend. So many great photographers can do that.
And they have them up here as well. And they do some fabulous work. Just it's because they're catching dogs in moments that we all miss, really. Right.
So. And really, the one reason you have to have a great eye and technically know the lighting. But to catch those moments, the dog jumps up and kisses you or whatever, you can hold the shutter down and get 150 of those and catch that moment. But that's not easy because you have to go through. I mean, I take 20 pictures of a dog. I got to go through 20 of them to figure out which one I like. You're talking about 1,000 pictures that these people have to go through to find the one that.
That's a lot of work. And it's funny, you'll see the photographers in the shows, and they'll snap right away and just get done, damn, boom, 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 and you'll get it back. Say, oh, I wish this. Oh, I can fix that.
Yeah. It's true. I remember when Brody's having his picture taken with his pointer, John was saying, pull the front back under. The front has to go, no, forward. Pull the front forward. And I'm like, front forward. Son of a gun.
He's been doing it forever. He knows seeing through that exactly lens. But the balance, yeah.
He knew what he was seeing through the lens. And that's, you have to be, I'll bet John would be a great all-breed judge at this point.
I'm sure he would. I'm sure he doesn't question he would be. Yeah. He has to have an eye for what he's done over the years.
And how many pictures he's taken?
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands. I mean, geez, think about the 50 years he's been doing it and all the shows. But
I'm sitting here thinking, I cannot think of a bad photograph I've received from John.
No, I haven't either.
I cannot. There's always that one, I wish this. I cannot think of one. Now, there may be one out there, but I cannot think of one where I've never been happy. I hadn't been happy with the result.
The first Pointer National I won in 1980, I think, was a horrible picture. And it wasn't John. I wish I had that memory with a good picture. It was a horrible picture. It was shot at like a 3/4 angle and everything was wrong about it. It's just, I've never shown a soul.
When I showed the impresario dog, he was one of those dogs that he knew when it was picture time and he would never stand up over his front. He fought me. It was hell to get a good picture of him. And the very first time I got the best picture of him was under Mrs. Clark because he was fighting me. She leaned over, grabbed his nose and said, cut it out. He stood there. Boom. Take the picture.
That's beautiful. If it's a win, I'm real excited as a judge. If it's a dog, I'm real excited about that I found somewhere. I'm involved in that picture. Before I get back there, no, do this, do that. I don't want that look. Do that. Then I'll get back there.
I've gone in and set dogs up.
Yes, I have too.
Hold this.
Yeah. That is funny. And then every judge has their style of holding a ribbon and where they're looking while they take the picture.
I love some of the classics.
Charlie Olmos is the best. Charlie looks not at the camera. He looks at the dog, and he has this serious look, and he bends forward the ribbon. They're classic. Every Charlie Olmos shot is a great shot, the way he doesn't stand there and smile at the camera with a ribbon. He just looks at the dog.
You remember Leslie Rogers up here in Canada?
Yeah, yeah.
Leslie was the best. He held the ribbon up like he just won third place in the science project in the yearbook. I loved it.
I think Ed Bivin started the angled cardboard rosette, right? The angled one finger up here and then the two fingers in the bottom in a very particular way. And now everybody copies that and holds their ribbon the same way.
Then there's the judges that hated the pictures taken halftime. You look over and they're holding it by the string and it is spun. So it just says the maker of the ribbon on the back. And
I haven't had any of those yet, but it will happen.
No, I had a couple of those. We had a judge named Boris Wilson. She just, they'd spin and be like.
Or they give you the dog won 500 trophies and gifts and lawn chairs and towels, and they want them all in the picture. You're trying to scramble around. And I'm always, I always ask a photographer, if I'm wearing a darker sport coat or suit, can you see this dog's head? Because I'll be glad to step over to the right, because that'll annoy you when you get a picture and the judge's coat is killing the outline of their head. But
all they do now is the photographer changed the color of your jacket. That's all they do.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'll change your jacket to gray. I don't want a gray jacket.
I can take a few pounds off you in Photoshop. I'm pretty good. Never mind. Per dog, I'm fixing myself.
I have the mad hair. A little bit of hair. Just
put a full head of hair on you there. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Broad in.
We talked a little about breed standards as it applies to its historical perspective. And I got a few emails and comments on that. Asking to say more about it. I think it's important to look at the date the standard was last revised. And even that, if you can go back to the original standard, then read the new one and see what they changed. There are standards that were changed to match the new trends.
Right.
That bothers me.
Me too.
That bothers me.
Not bringing the dogs up to the standard. You bring the standard down to the dogs.
Right.
What's that?
And that has been done, unfortunately. But they're so sacrosanct. I mean, the standards, you just mentioned you want to change a comma and there's riots in the street. I remember when Terry Stace and I were at the AKC, Terry had a really good idea to make the standards consistent by just putting them in order. You start with the head and then you go to the neck and then you go, so they're all in the same order. That's all he was asking for. Oh my word. You would have think it was unbelievable. I mean, the people, the clubs processed and screwed. The inconsistencies to the standards are an issue. And I don't have any problem the AKC makes people do a lot of things they don't want to do. I don't know why they don't want to mess with that. Well, I do know. If you mess with the club, you mess with the delegates, you don't get reelected, right? There's always that. But why would some of the standards say short hocks when that's not possible? It's a short rear pastern. Hock is a joint. And some say rear pasterns. Same exact part of the breed, the dog's anatomy. And we're talking about here is that the hock is that joint like a wrist or an ankle. Maybe an ankle is a better analogy. And the bone that goes from that hock joint to the ground is a rear pastern.
It's a pastern.
And it's been interchanged so often that people don't care. But if you're a new judge or you're trying to understand this, and by the way, I explained this to a really famous judge and handler, a former handler and multi-group judge recently, and they were shocked, never thought of it. So if all the standards said hocks well at down means the hock is lower to the ground, the hock joint is lower to the ground, which is pretty much the same thing as saying short rear pastern, right? But when it says short hocks, That makes no sense. Like that, that's like saying short ankle, right. Short wrist. Makes no sense. Terminology throughout, it would be nice if that was standardized in the standard.
But I think you're right. Over the years, we've just grown accustomed to saying hawk, and that's the hawk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. And there's other parts to the anatomy that gets sprayed. And then, you know, the words moderate, slightly is a big one. There's a million of them. It's scattered through every standard. Most every standard has a moderate and a slightly more than once. Again, that historical perspective. Why was it in there and when? If this is why I always think if you're starting to learn to breed and you haven't gotten back and looked what the dogs look like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you can interpret what slightly and moderate means. Because the standard was written in 1960 and a breed was, I don't know, slightly something. You'll look and see what that interpret, because take the dogs that won best in show at the Garden from the 60s and 70s. That standard, well, the poodle standard hasn't changed.
Exactly.
And look at Acadia Command Performance, look at the poodles today. The standard has not changed. Our interpretation has changed. And slightly and moderate and all those words that are relative words were relative to the time it was written. So we become so enamored with emphasizing so slight or moderately. By the way, moderately bent, moderately turned stifles. I haven't seen a moderate in a really long time that would match moderate from when the standards were written. That's for sure. I mean, you know.
Let's face it, back when the standards were written, you look at such, they were a straighter built animal. A lot of cases back then, we've added it. So the moderation has changed completely in our eye. So
exactly. Well, think about it. In general, things in our world, be it cars, speed, spaceships, typewriters, whatever it is, everything is getting more exaggerated. And thank goodness, you know, my first computer had a cassette tape hard drive. It could contain about one page of a letter. So yes, I mean, I'm glad they've exaggerated and sped up computers. You can hold whole nations on one laptop. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but when it comes to breed standards, you've got to freeze that in time and see what moderate, because I can tell you in sporting breeds, if they're not overangulated and sickle hock behind, they're straight for some reason. You know, which is ridiculous, because field trial dogs never, ever, ever have or never overangulated.
No.
Never. In any working sporting breed, never are they overangulated. And while most of the show dogs could be considered overangulated or with lots and lots of more angle than a field trial dog does, and that field trial dog has proven he can do the job. So where are we with that?
Right. You know. You see them working all day. And you got to think about that too. Like I've seen dogs, and you know they can't work all day. You know they're pretty to look at. They're a picture, but you know they're not going to work all day. Just, they're going to wear themselves out.
Yeah. Roy Holloway said to me once, we were talking about this, and he goes, hey, it's not a breeding evaluation contest. It's a beauty contest. And I was so mad. I'm like, Roy, how can you say that? And he said, oh, I don't like it. I'm just telling you.
Right.
It's become a beauty contest.
And figure skating, that's what I call it.
Yeah, and it's true. These exaggerations, they sneak in incrementally. Little, they don't happen overnight, so your eyes don't see it. When something happens incrementally, it's actually a scientific term for biology applied to fish, right, and other things, but when they happen so subtly over, you know, a millimeter every year for 25 years, and all of a sudden you've got something far different from what you used to have and no one under. But when you see sporting breeds walk away from you, and the first five steps is all rear pasterns, hocks flying here and there before they get into stride, that's not moderate. It's not even well angulated. Well angulated doesn't mean over angulated. It means well angulated. it's angulated well.
It's such a, it's so amazing how we perceive these things. Let's go back to like 75 or 76 when I can see his name because the dog is well gone. Marquis came out. Remember, everybody's like, oh my God, he's so this, he's so much of him. He'd just be another dog now, you know?
Yeah. Well, Yankee Rifleman.
Yeah.
He was a very moderate dog, both ends. I love that dog.
Well, and then I'm a huge Marquis fan, and because he was, Mr. Eldridge was called him a caricature of breed type at that point.
He had
all these things, and but now, like, I'm not saying he'd still be a good dog today, but you wouldn't go, oh my God, he wouldn't, right. he wouldn't shock you because of his presence, you know?
Right. Sagamore Tokoa, the cocker spaniel, Teddy Young in the garden with, certainly command performance. The poodle, you can go on forever. None of those dogs from the 70s and even 80s would have a chance today. They obviously met the breed standard in 1970.
Right.
They don't meet it now. The standard hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is the interpretation of the standards. That's what's changed. And that's just humans doing that. Because a little more and a little more and a little more gives you the edge, right?
Right.
A little more neck, I got the edge. A little more turn behind, I got the edge.
Same with grooming. It's the way things advance, the way things evolve. You know?
Yeah. And judges get used to seeing, and it's okay. And that's what wins. And then it keeps going and it keeps going, and you get more and more exaggerated. And
if Frank trimmed a Acadia at performance today, it'd be a different look completely.
Yes.
Than how he trimmed it back then, how he trimmed Tina back then. So.
Right. Well, look at some of the miniature poodles that Annie won the garden with.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even finish today.
Well, some hand would say, let's give that a haircut.
Right. But even if they did give it a haircut, it had feet under the withers. It wasn't, its tail didn't touch its head. It's a very different shape and look. And under jaw, foreface. I'm not saying they were better or worse. Don't get me wrong. Oh, they should all look like they did in the 60s. Well, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying when you look at a breed standard, you need to know what that term meant
right
when that word was written. And you need to go all the way back. Paintings are some of my favorites to look at from the 1800s. Now, you have to realize that the artists exaggerated for beauty. Because they were commissioned to do so. But you can see the subtleties of those breeds. If you look at paintings of spaniels and setters from the 1800s, you can't tell the spaniels apart. You know, clumbers certainly didn't look like they look like today, nor did setters. You can't tell an Irish setter from a Welsh Springer, from a red and white setter in some paintings, but they're beautiful dogs. They were just spaniels. We're the ones that broke them in varieties or breeds, and then began to exaggerate each one a little more. We're seeing in cockers lots and lots of sweeping angles that are fancy, but I don't know. Got to hunt woodcock. Remember, muzzle big enough to fit a bird in, and balance enough to hunt all day. Do we stop and think about that anymore? Is that the last thing they say? Because I can tell you in sporting dogs, the last thing I say to myself, if it's close, is okay. I'm really hungry. There's no place to buy food. I have a single shot shotgun. Which one am I taking with me? And if I frame it like that, I'm going to take the dog and go out there and do the job. That's my last minute criteria. If it's close, I want the one that I'm going to take hunting when I'm really hungry. And then I take them around and see how that shape holds together.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm right all the time. But I'm right way more than Will. See, I just see if you're listening, Will. You're
checking.
A very good friend of ours was talking about dogs at a show recently. Could have been Virginia. See? And Beagle's chiming in. And we talked about three hounds, and this very respected judge and very good friend said about this dog and this dog, and said, and Wayne and Will would disagree. And we do. So what?
Right.
You know, exactly. He's not wrong. We're not wrong. It's based on our interpretation of the standard. I mean, obviously we are right and he is wrong, but I mean, in general,
I was going to wait too long.
But really, that's a very respected opinion. And these are just different interpretations of the standard.
Right.
I said, there's no right or wrong. And of course, Eddie turned to Mark DeRosa and goes, do you think there's any right or wrong? And he just laughed. I didn't mean it like that. I meant among really good dogs, if two people who can describe, if they can describe what they like better.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a right or wrong, we'd have one dog show a year and the same dog would win, right? If there was a perfect way to interpret that standard. But that's not the way it works. You know, we have historical reference, functional. And by the way, don't tell me that toy breeds don't have a function. They all do.
Yeah.
Every breed does. And if you don't think so, go back to its root breeds. Go from there. My English toy spaniel, he was a spaniel. Rib cage, the way he approached game, the way he chased things. You know, he had the soul of a spaniel.
And you think of Yorkies. You tell me there's not a terrier and a Yorkie. Oh my God, there is so a terrier and a Yorkie.
Yeah, kid, show him a mouse. And
taking the message show. I've been a message show before where the Yorkies turn around and tried to like announce its presence with authority.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you want, right? That's what you want. So yeah. Anything else on standards, Will, that tickles your fancy? I mean, what about the differences between FCI standards and AKC standards when you're judging up in Canada, and then you've got to come down here to the States and judge?
Well, ours are basically the same as yours now. We're not really in an FCI. A lot of our, like, I remember when Havanese, I was in a ring of Havanese one time, and there was a bunch of them. This is when they first got popular. And a really good friend of ours, Skip, was judging the breed. And I put my dog on the table and he said, FCI or AKC, what do I do? Because they're all over the place in here. And I said, it's up to you to decide. I said, you're in America, so I think it's AKC. But
yeah, it's true, isn't it?
There was all shapes.
Even if you adjust your eye for the words in the standard, have you adjust your biases, you know?
Right.
So I've always thought that some psychology student, some PhD candidate in behavioral analysis or comparative psychology or even social psychology would have a picnic writing about the thought process of judges and what they go through. True confessions of a judge. Here's one confession that every judge should be able to make publicly. I made a mistake that day.
Right.
We're humans.
Exactly. Well, like,
not every day, but you would hope it's once in a blue moon. But the other thing like I do, and every time I ask a judge, honestly, that's a friend, they'll tell me the same thing. On the way home, you're sitting on the plane and you're saying, I know it didn't matter, but I should have switched third and fourth in that open class.
You're not thinking.
I'm sorry, Will.
Well, that's right. I interrupted you as well. But if I find myself, like I've just started judging, but I've judged sweepstakes for years and I've judged at other things for years. If I'm in a big class and I find myself taking too long, the line goes through my head every time. If you're thinking too long, you're thinking wrong. And that's how I correct myself. So
yeah, you've got to make those adjustments in your head.
Yeah.
And it's part of the process. Knowing what good dogs are is probably 60% of the judging process. Knowing how to sort them, confidence, being able to make decisions, and being able to make a ring all go into that formula.
Well, exactly. You can tell right away as a handler when you're out there and a judge is trying to talk themselves out of putting up the dog they want to put up.
Yeah, we've all done it.
And that's where that's the line of the dog you want to put up. That's the dog you want to put up, then that's the dog you put up. That's the right dog in your mind when you walked in that ring and saw the animals. Don't talk yourself out of it.
And if you're worth your salt, you probably made that decision the minute they were coming through the gate. And then you just want to reconfirm that decision.
Oh, for sure. You easily zero in on the dogs that catch your eye.
Yeah.
And you can see that. It's just trying to talk yourself out of the dog you think is the best dog in that ring. And I catch myself doing it as well. Oh, of course. You know they had this. But overall, Will, it's still the best dog. Do it. Just point, Will. No, I can't do it. It's like a little home run. No, don't do it, Will.
A little gremlin on your shoulder. No, no, stop. Bad foot, bad foot. Can't point. Yeah, we've got it. Judging the whole dog is another whole new level of thinking, too. It's so easy. We all fall into it. We all say we're judging the whole dog, but once in a while, we get hung up on one fault, and it drives you crazy, and that's one of those faults you just can't accept. And you miss out on some really good virtues. Exactly. Yeah. I like to think I don't do it very often, but I know I've done it.
I'm sure we've all done it, but you got to remember the virtues have to weigh.
Yeah. Hey, if I'm doing a national and all the dogs in the first four classes all have straight fronts, for example, I get so sick of seeing those straight fronts that for the rest of the day, they get over penalized, maybe. You know, that's just the way it works.
Well, you're starting to see a trend in the breeding stock is what's happening.
Yeah. So. And that's how I preach everything. It's just a breeder. So I'm going to look and say, man, if there's something here with a good front, it's going to get an edge because this is really bad when you see a whole breed in a state like this. And it could be more than bad fronts, could be anything.
Yeah. Nice example, of course.
Coats, retriever coats. You know, so it could be anything that are something essential to the breed's general type and function. So yeah, it's not as easy when people say, oh, I'd that judge do that. I can't wait for that judge to get a badge. I can't wait for that person to become a judge. It is very different in there, ladies and gentlemen. You can sit out there with your pens and criticize all day, but let me tell you, I will defend most every judge, not all of them. Even if it's not what I would have done, I can say, hey, they deserve being in there.
Right.
They know what they're doing. Different opinion than mine, but they don't know.
A lot of times, even when we differ, like when you and I discuss dogs, we have things that we get, but then we make a case for it and then we understand it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you and I seem really very much alike. And yeah. I think that's true. And that's, and not on all of them, obviously. And there's some people that, you know, Wade Burns was something from Lambert Kennels, John Wittering Wade. Wade and I never disagreed on one bone on one beagle. We saw him exactly.
The thing about Wade, too, is Wade would look at a dog and he'd see what it would do.
Yes.
Two generations. Like he was a smart guy.
He sure was. But it's rare that you find someone that you agree on every single bone. And then, you know, you have friends that you love and you know they're good dog people. You hardly agree with anything.
Yeah, you say black, they say white.
Yeah, and just coming at it from a different, but they're consistent about it, you know. And usually that's because they like them more fancy than I think they should be. That's usually the case.
Yeah.
I may have mentioned there's a dog that I gave Winner's Dog to who wasn't very pretty, didn't need to be for this breed. In fact, he was kind of boring, but he had so many parts that breed hasn't seen in years and needed. And the other exhibitor came up to me and said, but he wasn't pretty. That's just, you know, all right, open the standard, show me the words.
Show me where it says pretty.
But yeah, sometimes we do what we do. Anyway, young William, I have an appointment. You have a big day ahead of you. I don't know.
I do. I'm interviewing Danny Sackos this afternoon.
I'm really?
Excited about it, yes.
Wonderful. Would you bring in a dog there?
No. I'm interviewing Danny.
Oh, you're interviewing Danny.
Interviewing Danny Sackos.
Oh, that'd be good. That'll be fun. And are you going to let me chime in on the interview?
Maybe.
I think like it or not.
Telling me it's time to go back out again. So
there you go. Well, you better listen to her, Will. All right. Well, thank you very much, young William. You have a great day. And let's look forward to our big shows in Is it Old York or Old Fort?
Old York. Old Toronto. York Kennel Club in Toronto.
I still think there's time to get into
it. It's not Toronto. It's Toronto.
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 The big smoke, Toronto.
Yeah. It's all I can say is where the Hockey Hall of Fame is. Or is it the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Hockey Hall of Fame.
I've been there.
It's a museum. It's our shrine. It's where we go to meet.
I've been there.
It's where that's friends my, gather, Wayne.
Yeah. But you all say bean. We don't say bean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Two languages. No, let's see. Two nations divided by the same language.
Well, I got to go and take a walk of boot.
Yeah. I'm going to go put my boots on and take a walk.
You're going to
take
a walk. Boot.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then.
Well, let me do it. No, stay safe, everybody.
Party on, Bert.
I'm born. No way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Give me grace. Bury my sins.
So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself so damn seriously.
Thanks, Ernie.
Oh, we didn't mention hockey. Isn't that unbelievable, though? Put that in, Doc.
Man, I want to see it on a blooper anywhere.